Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashlyn Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 223. It's the week of March 7th, 2016, and I'm coming at you from the Center of the Universe, Ashland, Virginia. I'd like to thank you for coming along. I've got a great show for this episode. Lots of material. I ran the Mississippi Trail 50-mile ultra marathon this past weekend on March 5th and had an outstanding experience. I made it, and some cool things happened along the way, which I will share in the podcast. I've got a whole stack of stuff to go through. 50 miles is a long way, so there's plenty to talk about over the course of, as I recount, kind of go over my race report here. So hopefully you stick around for that. If you're a new listener, I think you'll find this podcast interesting. I'm middle of the pack, ordinary nobody who likes to do some of these ultra distances, and I've found myself to be fairly successful at it. I don't win anything, but I finish, and that's I guess why I do it. I just go out there for the challenge. If you're a returning listener, I'd like to thank you for coming back, and appreciate you being a loyal listener to the podcast. I continue to get emails from listeners on a regular basis, and I've got several for the email bag section of the show. In fact, that might even take up a good chunk of the show as well. So I traveled down to Hattiesburg, Mississippi on March, I went down on March 3rd. I traveled down with my dad and a friend of mine named John Snuggs, who is also listening to the show. He's one of the members of Team Incognito, kind of my virtual training group that used to be a physical training group. Now we just kind of encourage each other virtually online because it's hard for us to all get together on a regular basis. He had crewed me before, and but this was his first attempt at a 50. He was successful as well. I'll talk about his result when we get towards the end of the podcast, when we kind of go over the finishing times. But like I said, I did finish, and I was very pleased with my result. I had a personal best for the distance for the day, and it was pretty incredible considering that the course was something was very similar to the Willis River 50K that I was a DNF at back on January 10th, and I'll go over the course, of course. I'll go over the course of the podcast because that had a it just had a big impact on the day. It was an interesting course. But before I get into my material, I would like to share some of the race director's comments. I recorded when there was a pre-race dinner the night before the race and a race briefing. And for some of my northern and Midwest friends, I think they will appreciate the southern drawl of the race director, whose name is Dennis Bissonnette.
Okay, let me see if anybody, y'all hear me in the back over here and back over here? Everybody hear me? Okay. Everybody always wants to hear the race director talk. I don't know why, but I guess I can answer the most important question right now. Will you get your feet wet? Yes. It rained Thursday a lot, so the course is kind of damp. We've got Randy back there ran today. There was two or three other people that ran the course today, and they survived, and you will too. Okay? That's really the most important thing, I guess. Other than that, just make sure you have fun. The weather is going to be absolutely great. You're not going to have better weather out here. I think it's 40 degrees and up to about 72, 73 range. So we want everybody to carry a bottle if you're running the longer races, the 50K and the 50 mile. Not really have to if you're running 20K, but you might ought to. And we don't want to use that many cups if we can get away with it. I've been to a lot of races lately where you have to carry a bottle and they don't have cups. I think that's a little inconvenient because I don't want to put Coke in my bottle and then turn around and drink water too. So That's what we generally use most of the cups for. Coke and what else, and then fill your water bottle, your bottle with water or Heed. We always have Heed out there. I like it. I know a lot of people don't. I get to order the stuff, so. There are signs out there for the course. You've all run this before. You know that we got 1 mile, 2 mile like that out there. When you get on the Little Loop, we only mark it for the 50K people, and you can look at it. Some of them are not exactly, they may not match your GPS. We've run places where there's four or five of us, and our GPSs don't agree. But I assure you, when you get through, you've covered, in the case of the 20K, it's 12.6. In the case of the 50K, it's 31.3. And then the 50 mile is exactly 50 miles. We didn't want the 50 milers to go any further than they had to, but we don't worry about the shorter folks. If you're not running on the best trail you see out there, you're running in the wrong place. It is 6-8 feet wide in most places. If you think you're lost, look down. If you don't see footprints in the mud, you're in the wrong place. Go back to where you see footprints in the mud, and you ought to be able to figure out which is the front of the foot and which is the back of the foot, and go that way. It's pretty simple out there. On the other hand, some of us have been past 12 and 15 cones and went right past them before. So, on a road course, you know, you get out there and you get brain dead and you get lost. So try to think a little bit. On the Big Loop, as we call it, that's the 12.6, there are orange flagging tape all the way around it. If you make a corner and you don't see orange flagging tape, three or four of them in a row, you're in the wrong place. There's orange paint on the road. When you're on the road, it'll be there the first lap. After that, it may be there some, but it starts getting run in. But you follow that. If you're making the 50K or the 50 mile, 50K does a blue loop with blue flagging tape. There are blue plates with arrows on them. There's orange plates with arrows on them. The only time you'll run the same course is the first mile is the same both ways. When you get to the end of the first mile, for the orange, you go to the right, down the hill through a mud hole, to a creek, okay? If you're on the blue loop, you go to the left, and you go, actually the mud hole is about the first mile on the orange, and it's about a mile and a half on the blue, okay? And that's a big one. There's a tree off to the side you can walk on, but it'll be real muddy and slick. So probably just need to go straight on through that. And it's going to be about that deep or so. About knee deep on a 6 foot fella. You short people are in trouble.
Thanks a lot.
All right, well, I'll probably let that drag on a little bit too long there, but you kind of get the point where the race director, Dennis, had obviously received a lot of inquiries about the condition of the course, so that's why he addressed it. And there's no doubt about the depth of the water that he was describing, and I'll get to that as we get through the race report. But before I even got down to Mississippi, and I had some concerns about some of my toenails. My left toe, the big toe, that toenail had popped off, which was a good thing because it was going to be hanging on anyway, and I'm glad it came off before I got down there and I had to deal with that during the race itself, because you never know when a toenail can kind of come across and then dig into your skin and, you know, cut it up and whatnot. So I was glad that came off. I had previously, I think I had mentioned in a previous podcast about the $50 gift certificate that I had received from my neighbor in response to something that I had done for her, which was unexpected. It would have been insulting to return it. So I went ahead and invited Ashlyn Bryan, Ashlyn Time up to the our little watering hole up the road called the Caboose. And we, Tom initially said he couldn't make it, but then he ends up showing up. So the $50 was easily consumed in liquid form. And I think, matter of fact, what I did is I gave it to the waitress and I said, just let me know when we've drank $50 worth. So, and that didn't take too long at all. But it was cool to see those guys and thank them for helping me out with through my training along the way. So why did I choose the Mississippi Trail 50? A couple reasons there. The big run is Mississippi is really where my mom's side of the family is from, and specifically Clarksdale. Now, my cousin John, his name is John Pendergrass, he lives in Hattiesburg, which is about 70 miles north of the Mississippi Gulf Coast, about 100 miles from New Orleans. And so that's kind of outside the Delta region. It's actually called the Coastal Region. Mississippi's kind of broken up into regions, and at least like for tourism kind of thing. And back in 2010, it was after I ran the Sterling Gym in May of 2009 that I started looking for a 50, because the Sterling Gym was around 43, 44 miles, and I thought, man, I could do a 50 if I can go that far. So I started kind of shopping around, and John is kind of an old school ultra runner. He's an Ironman triathlete six times over. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Or if you want to stop right here and go back to podcast 180, you can learn all about him. He wrote a book called Against the Odds, and about his experiences doing triathlons in his 60s on six continents. Anyway, that's a whole separate story, so a whole separate podcast, but I'll hit on that here and there. Well, John had invited me down when he kind of heard through family talk that I was interested in this. And I looked on the website, and I had no interest at that time in running trails or mud or anything like that, or running through a forest, because I know forest trails have muddy, they have low spots. And I already knew that, I tended to blister. I just wasn't interested in trail running at that point. I kind of wanted a road ultra, because I'd done well with the Sterling Gym, which was all a road ultra up in the mountains. So I declined his offer and never really thought much about it again. But the reason I had looked at that race initially is because that's the side of, like I said, my mom's side of the family, which we kind of mostly identify with over the years, is from Mississippi, and I just thought it'd be fitting to do it there, but I was a little intimidated by the course. So I declined that. And John Pendergrass, not only is he a Vietnam veteran, he's a semi-retired ophthalmologist. He's an old tough bird is what he is, in his early 70s. He was really the only one in the family growing up that did marathons. And that was used to, when you're young and you hear somebody that does marathons, what you know about marathons is what you see on TV whenever they would have the big one. Or back in my day, we would see the ABC's Wild World of Sports, which was on Saturday afternoons, and that's when they had some of the obscure sports that now you see on special channels. But back then, they kind of condensed it into a two-hour program, and you might see little snippets here and there. And that's how I knew about marathons. And John did all the big ones. I don't know how many he's done, but he's done plenty of them, and he knows all about endurance and battles in the mind and digging down deep and getting through these events and the spiritual aspect of it. So we had that in common. And so when he invited me down again to come down and do the Mississippi Trail 50, I knew that I needed to accept, because you don't get a third, generally speaking, you don't get a third invitation from people. I know, if I meet somebody and, say I make a new friend or something and do work or whatever, and you say, hey, let's go out and get a beer, or let's, let's get together and go shooting or something like that, and they turn you down and they say, oh, I'm busy, and then say you invite them again and they turn it down, they're pretty much saying they don't want to hang out with you. I mean that's the way I look at it. So and you got to be able to get that message. Well, I didn't want John to think that I did not want to come down, because I did. So I just decided I would have to train for this event. And not only was I intimidated by trails, which is just not my strength, you know, the distance, 50 miles, you know, I've only done it a few times, and the cutoff was 12 hours. So I was already, you know, double and triple worried. And I get terrible anxiety about these things. I don't know why I do them. I'll talk about that later in the podcast, and do a little philosophy corner section about why I do them. But so I had all these unknowns, and so I was curious about the nature of the course as well, the layout of it, the mud, the depth of the water, how it would handle that, and that's why I played that clip from the race director, Dennis. So I needed a crew, and my dad and John are good friends as well as relatives, so because they're close in age. And the reason John is my first cousin, and the reason he's so much older than me is because his mother and my mother are sisters, but there was many, many years in between them. So my mom was the youngest in her family growing up, and when she was little, you know, she had adult brothers and sisters. So when they had children, they were, so some of, in other words, you know, John's old enough to be my father, but we're first cousins only because our mothers were so far apart in age. So I needed, my dad readily accepted. He and John went on a religious pilgrimage a couple years ago, El Camino, and they got really close. They've been friends over the years also, because we go down to a family reunion in Mississippi every year, or every other year sometimes. Try to go every year. At least we say we're going to go every year, but it's hard to get down there because it's a two-day drive, expensive to fly. It's just kind of, so we try to do every other year. And then I wanted somebody else to run it with, and so I asked my good friend, John Snuggs, we call him Snuggy Bear, and he accepted, and this was going to be his first 50. And one of the main attractions for him, and I have to say for me too, was that a belt buckle was an award if you finished, you buckled. And that would be the first for me, because generally the buckles are kind of reserved for 100-mile races or 100K. That's at least my perception of when I look at these different ultra marathons. So, but to get a buckle to run 50 miles would certainly be something cool. So that was another attraction. And John Riley, Snuggy Bear Riley accepted that. And so we made travel plans and got down there Thursday, March 3rd, and had a big family dinner that night with John Pendergrass, his wife Polly, and then his adult son John Jr., and then me, my dad, and Snuggy Bear. And went to a local place down in Hattiesburg called Cotton Blues and just loaded up on chicken and pasta and had several beers and just had a great, great I guess it was six of us, and John, we kind of adopted Snuggy Bear for the night. And he got to hear all these family stories, and he sat there very, very politely and hung out while everybody, you know, told stories about family. And just had a real nice evening. And John Pendergrass had put us up at his lake lodge. He's got a kind of a rustic, what he calls the lodge, that sits on a lake outside of Hattiesburg in a real private area. It's a gated area. It's very nice. And so we were very relaxed there. And that's where he was putting us up, because there was three of us. And we got to see his Iron Man water bottle display. He's got this shelf that has six water bottles on it, all Iron Man logo from each continent that he did. And so there was New Zealand, China, or Asia, Brazil, the United States, Europe, and then in Africa. And that's six. I'm not sure. And that's all in his book called Against the Odds. You can, it's like $15 on Amazon. I think it's $3 if you get it on your Kindle through Amazon. And he had lots of other stuff throughout the lodge from the various marathons he did over the years. Coasters, just, you know, stuff that just, you got to put it somewhere. And it was just really cool. So Friday was a rest day. We kind of took in some of the local culture, drove into the city, drove around a little bit. It's an interesting town. And just kind of spent a lot of time going through my gear, getting my dad oriented with my equipment and my strategy. And it was so warm out, got to sit outside on the deck and just kind of that overlooked the lake. It was just real relaxing. And then we, of course, had the pre-race dinner that night. And the pre-race dinner was at a agricultural building that was, I think it was about, I don't know, it was in between Hattiesburg and Laurel, which is where DeSoto National Forest is. It's kind of in between there. And we met John there because all his running buddies are the ones that put this race on. And so he volunteers. He was at the registration table. You know, he got swag, got a lapel pin, a coffee mug, shirt, some other stuff in the swag bag. And then, of course, they had advertised on the website that you'd get a buckle and a visor if you finished. And so I wanted to get a crew gift for my dad. And then, of course, if you're not aware that if you crew somebody in an ultra and you're able to get a race shirt, you have full rights and privileges of wearing that shirt wherever you want, even though you didn't run it, but you crewed somebody. So that makes you part of the event. So I wanted to get, I saw that the shirt was really cool and I wanted to get my dad one. And I was willing to, you know, I brought some cash. I was willing to pay double to get my dad this shirt. And, I talked to John and I told him, hey, you know, who do I talk to about purchasing a shirt? He said, I'll get you a shirt. So, he arranged that and that was really cool. And we gave it to my dad later, as his crew gift. And, that's something to, if you haven't run an ultra before and you do have somebody that crews you, it is kind of customary to get them some kind of gift, whether it's, just something running related. It doesn't have to really be much, but, it's just something that I've read along the way that's customary to do. So we had the pre-race briefing, which you heard, that audio clip there from the race director. And they didn't go over this, and I was a little surprised that the race director didn't talk about Carl Touchstone, who was the race is named after him. It's a memorial race. But I did learn a little bit about him. He died in 2000 from prostate cancer, died way too early, and he was, again, one of these old-school ultra runners in the South with this group that puts the race on, and they had put the race on for several years. This year was the 20th year, and Carl was involved in it, and they would go out to DeSoto National Forest and do training runs for other ultras, this group. I don't know if they have a name or not. It was like something Area Runners. I saw somebody wearing a shirt, I think. Then he died early. He's the one that moved the race to that forest because they realized, hey, we've got a good venue here to do an ultra, so let's do it. And then he died in the first 3 years of the race. So the race was actually named after him. And I actually met his wife, or his widow, after the race, Mrs. Touchstone, and she told me a little bit about her husband, and that was really nice. So. So that's why it's named after him, and it's called the Carl Touchstone Memorial Mississippi Trail 50 is what it's called. So we went to bed early Saturday, Friday night, because the race started at 6 in the morning. It was an hour drive to the race site, and John was going to come get us at 4:15, and we were going to follow him over, you know, taking two cars. He was in that way. He made sure we got there to the location. So we got up at 3:15, and got everything together, got the car loaded, and I met him at 4:15. And we got there about 5:20, so it was plenty of time to get parked, get all lubed up and ready to roll. And the race started pretty much right on time, maybe a few minutes after 6. And the interesting thing about it is that, you know, that's 6 a.m. Central Time, so it was 7 a.m. Eastern Time, and that's kind of 7 a.m. my body time. So getting up at 3:15 Central wasn't really that bad. I mean, It still felt like I slept all night. I tell you, I slept great Thursday night going into Friday morning. I think I was asleep 6.5 hours without waking up at all. Friday night was a little bit different because you're nervous and stuff and got up really early. So my Garmin GPS still said 7 a.m. on it. And that would prove to kind of trick me a little bit over the course of the day because I knew my Garmin probably wouldn't make the whole day. The battery would burn out. So I knew I could put on a wristwatch at that point in time. And if I knew if we started at 6, then if we started at 6 a.m., then, you know, every hour was an hour into the race, and it was a cutoff at 2:45 if you hadn't finished the third loop, and I'll talk about that in a second. So I kind of wanted the Garmin to be correct with the actual time, and it never really flipped over. I don't know why, and then it took a dump anyway later in the race, so it didn't even matter that much. Otherwise, you kind of like to see, you know, 45 miles, 46 miles, 47 miles on your Garmin, because it's just incredible to go that far and kind of see that feedback. But it took a dump, and I didn't get to see that. So the race itself was in DeSoto National Forest, and when we turned off the main road going to the forest, we went mile after mile after mile into the woods, and I just remember thinking, God, it's going to take forever to get out. We're behind someone really slow, and it just seemed like it took forever for us to get to the parking area. But once we got there, people were intense. There was a lot of people there. It was 107 had registered for the 50 mile, or according to the website, and they also had a 50K and a 20K events. And you actually had the option of dropping down to the 50K if you wanted to, but you had to make that decision early on. If you were having a bad day, you'd have to make that decision. I pretty much was going for the 50 mile the whole time, and I just knew, well, if I did have some kind of problem, I could drop to the 50K and still get a finish if I made it that far. But I didn't go down there not to get the belt buckle. So it was three loops of 12.6 miles, so that would be add up to 37.8, I think. I can't do math. And then two 6.1 mile loops in a different part of the forest. And those two loops overlapped about 1 mile. So all the runners did three, and then you did two. And that would, mentally, that's just a very, it was interesting to think about how easy it was going to be over the course of the day. It's like, oh, I can't wait to be done with these three big loops, because then I got these little tiny loops to do. And that was exactly the way I felt. So the first loop, which Dennis described in the audio clip I played, it was mud, water, knee-deep water, ankle-deep water constantly. But you could run in between the mud events. I'm going to call them, they call them mud holes. I think that's an interchangeable, that and creek are kind of an interchangeable term in the Deep South, which is where we were. But there was no joke about knee-deep water. And you could take one step thinking it was, like, for example, you might be following somebody and they walk through and it only comes up to the lower part of the shin, and then you come right behind them and you go down to your knee because it was so soft in the mud hole. Several times I felt it pulling at the heel of my shoes, and I did see people who came out of the water and their shoe was still in the water, and so they had to go get it. And that's just really nasty. But once you just accept the fact that you're going to be soaked, and the water was cold too, and that I think helped with the lack of blistering with my feet, because I have these really soft feet. That's like a baby's bottom. They're just soft, and they used to be pretty, but now they're all gnarly, especially the toenails. So, mud, more mud, but there was plenty of running in between. Don't get me wrong. I kept a real strong perspective. I knew that it was going to be muddy. It was a whole different perspective going into this event than when I was a DNF at the Willis River 50K. And back on January 10th, I met several people out on the trail, Pat Fuller out of Alabama, Jerry Sullivan out of New Orleans. And these were guys that, you know, you'd pass, you'd do your walk break, they'd pass you, or you'd, you know, be 10, 20 feet apart from each other, and you're having a running conversation. And that first loop went really fast. I was very just pleased. My feet, everything was working out fine with the feet. I did a sock change the first time I came through the start finish to finish the first loop. My dad had everything laid out on a table, and then he was told he had to move everything because they were going to start serving beans and rice over there. So he moved everything back to the car, which was kind of the original plan, but we weren't sure. They weren't really that clear in the race brief on where you could put your stuff if you couldn't get a parking spot along the course, which is, we got really close to the course. So everything, the headquarters went back to the car, and everything worked out fine. But I did a sock change and kept the same shoes, did a real good powder job on the feet, dried them out, they were okay. There was really no issues there. And the only thing I take away from that is that if I'm going to use powder on my feet, make sure I close the bin of close the top to my plastic bin that has all my supplies, because I got baby powder all in the damn plastic bin. So I had to make sure I didn't do that next time. But my dad had everything good to go. He was a great crew. Snuggy Bear had already come through there, and different runners want different things. So I'm not really sure what John had, but Dad did a great job, but then he moved everything back to the car. I decided to keep the same shoes on because they were already trashed. However, you know, all the mud washes off when you go through the next mud hole. If it's not as deep, the mud will come off your shoes, and they were draining pretty good. So I went ahead and kept the same shoes, and just because I brought four pairs, and I thought, well, I'll change them at the next loop if necessary, because I already knew what to expect, and I knew they were going to be wet within the first 10 minutes anyway. So it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to put on a dry pair of shoes just to get them wet. And it's also, after I finished that first loop at 12.6 miles, it's kind of funny how that's really nothing to write home about during the course of a 50 miler, but it sure is a lot when that's your whole distance for the day. I just think it's strange how that the perspective on the distance changes depending on how far you go. Same thing with the 26.2 distance when you're doing an ultra. I've said this before, it has no meaning during that event, but boy, does it mean a whole lot in other events. And so I've always found that to be interesting. And I had the same feeling that day. I remember thinking, gosh, man, that one loop is done. I got to do two more big ones. It just feels like you run 12.6, but it just felt like you hadn't really accomplished anything. At one point, I was having a really good first half of the race. And at one point, my dad said, Dave, you're scaring me. Because he'd never been out to an ultra marathon before. And I think his lack of understanding of what these events are and who participates in them maybe contributed to, he kind of jokes me from time to time. I mean, he's a distance runner in his own right, and he's got a running group, and they're always asking about, you know, my distances and stuff, and I think he kind of laughs about it some. But now that he knows that this is it's serious, and you know, I'm a finisher for the most part, I think he was had a real good day, and he was really excellent. He's an excellent crew. He was new to it, but he also got, I'm sure he talked to plenty of other people while the two runners that he was crewing were out on the course. So I went along, did the second loop. That was about 25 miles. So I guess that's 20. It was 25.4 miles. I did that in 5 hours and 1 minute. My initial goal was to do 5 miles an hour for, you know, as long as I could, which I was hoping to do it for the first half of the race, because then that would leave me 7 hours to finish 25 miles, which I knew I could do almost by just walking the whole time, which obviously I wasn't going to walk the whole time, but I knew at that point I would make the 12-hour cutoff, which was the overall goal for the whole day, was to make the 12-hour cutoff to get the belt buckle and get another finish. That was the overall goal. And of course, then, you know, in between that, you have these little goals that you want to chip away at. And, you know, second one would be, okay, well, if I'm going to make the cutoff of 12 hours, can I beat my previous time of 11, I think it was 11 hours, 39 minutes was the, but not all 50-mile courses are the same, so it's kind of hard to compare. However, that's all I had to compare to. So, the second goal would be to try to lower the time, and I thought, well, plenty of times in training I had done 5 miles an hour for hours and hours, and I do that with walking a mile, running a mile, walk a tenth, running a mile, walk a tenth, and do that over and over and over. Of course, I didn't run through the mud holes or the creeks or the mud, the stretches of mud, because that would have made any sense, because I did slip and fall. And I tell you, once I got mud caked all over the side of my legs from falling, because I fell both sides, at that point I was kind of having fun, because I knew I wasn't going to stay clean. And if once you just, I think I just didn't accept that out at Willis River. I think I was trying to avoid it, but here I accepted it and embraced it, and kind of made the mud my bitch. You know, I was kind of cocky a little bit to myself, instead of going in with this, you know, barely hanging on attitude. I went in with more confidence today. Now, at the end of the, so I did that, and here's how I did the finished up that second loop. there was a local boy named John Rampella. I think it was local, named John Rampella. He was telling me he was also an Ironman, but this was his first 50. He was talking about how hard it was. And towards the end of the second loop, I heard this guy come. He seemed to know everybody. And people were still bunched up together. Not bunched up, but there were people out on the course that you would see ahead of you, behind you. We weren't really all that stretched out yet. Not everybody was. And I heard this guy coming, and he was talking, and he just seemed to have a whole lot of momentum, and he came up right alongside of me, and he kept going, and I got on his six, and I just kept, he just pulled me right into the finish of that second loop, and I just felt this, like this pull, this momentum, and I thought, you know, this guy's got it. I'm going to stay right on him, and I'm going to get up there, and I'll rest when I get to the aid station at the start finish line at the finish of the second loop. And it was just almost like it was a magical feeling of being pulled in by this guy's momentum and his positive forward progress. And I thanked him. He ended up finishing after me much later. And turned out Snuggy Bear talked to him a lot out on the trail too. And we got to see him at the finish. So, you know, inspected the feet at the end of the second loop. This is, you know, 25.4 miles. This is, you know, 5 hours of soaking wet feet for the most part. Had a little bit of concern. Nothing was feeling weird in my shoes. However, I was starting to feel the dirt and the sediment that was settling in the shoes. And what I mean by that is the gaiters, we had gaiters, they didn't work. They just, there wasn't anything big enough, any rocks out on the trail to pop in the shoes. And the gaiters just kind of were, was just another soggy thing to wear. So we took those off. But the dirt, you know, the muddy, the dirt that was floating in the water, whatever, you know, settled in the shoes, and then you would kind of feel like you had small marbles under your toes. And so that's when it was a good time to change the shoes, because I wasn't going to be able to scrape that dirt off the insoles. And I had, that's why I brought other pairs of shoes, was to solve these problems. I knew the shoes were going to get wet again, but it took two loops for me to start feeling that dirt settling in the shoes. And I heard other people talking about it too, so I know other people were experiencing it. So, you know, I had no energy issues. I had no blistering, no foot problems at all. Good crew, was talking to people. The mud was kind of wearing on me, but I was handling it. I wasn't going to get negative about it. And I rewarded myself with a fresh pair of shoes. And turns out I would wear those same shoes for the remainder of the race. Went on to do the third loop, finished that up, 37.8 miles in 7 hours, 55 minutes. At that point, I had 12.2 miles to go, had 4 hours to do it. You know, that's 3 miles an hour, I think. At that point, I can walk 3 miles in an hour. That's a 20-minute walk. And, you know, I was talking to this guy, Jerry, out on the course, and he had run several hundred milers. He was very tall and real nice guy. And he said he ended up doing just the 50K, because he said he had done something last weekend, or he was doing another race next weekend or something. And he said he had wished that he had signed up for the 50 miler. I guess if you sign up for the 50K, you couldn't go up, but you could go down races. You couldn't upgrade. He said he employs something called the 20-minute rule, where he runs as long as he can until he knows he can walk 20-minute miles and still make the cutoff. And so I was trying to figure that out, and I just couldn't figure out the math on that. But I knew that at that point in time, well, let me back up to when I was halfway done and I had 7 hours to finish 25 miles. That's when like 100% confidence set in. If I knew that if something would have to go horribly wrong for me not to finish in 12 hours, and there was a chance I'd have a much better finishing time than before. Now, granted, still have the race to go. I didn't know about what the smaller loops looked like, but I did know that I had 7 hours to go 25 miles, and I knew I could do that by walking fast and just running a little bit here and there. And, you know, of course, the whole point is to go out and run these things. But really, if your goal is just to buckle, really, it doesn't matter how you get there, right? I mean, that's up to the individual. So I had a lot of confidence going to that third loop. And then when I was 12.2 miles to the finish and I still had over 4 hours and 5 minutes to go, you know, that was, to me, well, this is going to, I don't want to use the word easy, but clearly I was going to make it. And things kind of transitioned around that area between 37 up to 40 to 43 miles. I had this, well, I'll get to that in a minute. It was like a incredibly just peaceful calmness feeling that came in. And it was really nice to be done with those three large loops, knowing that all the mud and that the mud holes and the creek crossings was over with. Because, well, I was asking people who had been out there before, what is a smaller loop like? And, you know, more mud is what I was told. A hilly, totally dry. And then somebody said, oh, it's flat. So, you know, I thought, you know, I've already done three loops of a muddy course. I don't care what it is. I'm going to make it. I mean, I'm just going to get through it. And that I did. So it was nice to be done with the three large loops. And then going on to a different part of the forest. And it was around this time that I thought I would go ahead and do the phone a friend thing that I talked about in the podcast before. And I had a couple people contact me about that. Of course, my wife, Dr. Smitty, Marisa, and Steve. Steve's local. Dr. Smitty's, I talk about him all the time on the podcast. He's out of Chesapeake. Marisa's up in Michigan. And then I was also texting some of my friends here at home. And, you know, you might think, well, why would you, you know, you're out there in the woods and, you know, in this own little world, and why would you want to, you know, connect to the outside world for, I don't know, because I just wanted to change things up a little bit. So I did like the connection to the outside world. It was kind of, the elevation change was a lot on the little loops. And I wasn't able to get some calls out. However, the texting worked. I was letting some folks know what my mileage was. I did talk to my wife for a little while. And, of course, the texting worked a little bit better until, you know, I was texting and I hit a route and tripped and, you know, went down. And that was when the phone use was terminated at that point. I thought there's really no need for me to be out here texting anybody. Although it was fun to get some encouragement from that, and that was very helpful because I had this very calm, kind of a peaceful feeling come over me. It was like everything's okay. There was like no thoughts other than right in the moment. And you know, the people I was talking on the phone, you know, I was just listening. I wasn't really saying a whole lot. I guess it definitely runner's high. It was just a peaceful, happy moment, or over the course of this couple miles, like everything's gonna be fine. I'm gonna finish. I'm gonna have another 50 miler. It was an incredibly satisfying feeling, even though I hadn't finished yet. And you know, there were some variables there. I guess I could have drowned or something on one of the crossings, because one of them was kind of deep, but it had a log, just like the race director described in the audio clip. Because there was a horse. There were horses out there. Saw a few of those. And when I came up to that crossing, I think it was the second time when I only had a few miles to go, the horse was standing in the water, and that's where I could tell how deep the water was. And I think that was deeper than knee deep, just based on where the horse was standing, how deep in the horse was, or maybe the horse sunk in the mud. And I don't know why they were just standing there, because I crossed on the log, and I don't know, I guess it was probably 15 yards across, maybe a little bit more, so that log was real handy. So, you know, the horses didn't bother me. It was just kind of a suspension of time. And, of course, I had slowed down a whole lot. But I was running. I was getting closer and closer. A lot of that time out there was by myself. I saw, like I said, I saw a few horse people on horseback. And that just kind of made the woods kind of cool. And it was kind of a spiritual time, very private. Kind of felt like I had the whole woods to myself. I didn't really see much of anybody towards the end. And I think that was kind of a good thing, although I did have somebody come up on me real fast named Tim out of Tennessee. And it kind of surprised me how quickly he came up on me. But that was right towards the end, and that wasn't any big deal because we ended up running together towards the end there. Now, I did want to read from my race. What I do is I prepare a race report for my running group, and I had a note here in my notes to look at the second to last paragraph. So let me look at that, see what that says. Okay, so yeah, somewhere along the way, I discovered I was definitely going to finish much faster than any of my previous 50-mile races, and I think the last one I did was 11:39, and then I think 11:52. down in the Keys, and it was clearly I was going to break 11 hours. I could figure that out, and of course that I thought, you know, what's the catch here? Do I have to do another loop, or did I miss something? And I did the course, and but all day I kept waiting for the wheels to come off, as they say, but it just never happened. I ate early on. I took my walk breaks early on. I kept a very strong mental perspective all day. I didn't let that waver at all. I was cocky to myself at times, just, you know, telling myself, you know, you got this. A lot of positive talk. And what I do is I take a magic marker and I write different things on the inside of my right forearm, because I'm left-handed, because I can't write on my other arm, and things to kind of remind me of some mantras. So I had, support from afar. I had your sport. I had mental toughness, family, and friends. And those were the things that that got me through. I mean, it was just because each one of those things that I wrote on my arm would give me positive thoughts. And I kept that all day. And all those things worked in my favor. I was very pleased overall with my finish time of 10 hours, 46 minutes, and 0 seconds. And just in retrospect, I just really think it's funny how all of a sudden the finish line's in view, the race is over. You go from running all day to barely being able to walk to your car. And, you know, there it is. It's I'm still kind of reflecting on the whole experience. It's so for kind of the philosophy corner part of the podcast here, and then, of course, definitely want to get to the email bag section of the show. I might have to I'll have to check those. I got a lot of emails from listeners and encouragement, which is completely appreciated at all times at ashlanddave@gmail.com. So why do I do this? Why do I go out there and run something that, you know, there's only a few people at? And I remember I was telling my dad, I said, "Dad, you know, there's not going to be anybody here. There's nobody cheering. It's there's not a whole lot of fanfare at the end of an ultra marathon. This one, you know, had a finish line and a clock, but when I ran the Graveyard 100, there was a finish line, had an F painted in the parking lot, and that's, you know, how simple some of them can be. But I'm still searching for that answer about why I run, why I do these, and I think it's the question's answered when you're out on the course, and I think the answer kind of stays out there on the course. You bring back the experiences and the feelings, but the real answer why you're doing it, I think, kind of stays out there. It's not just physical for me. It's a spiritual thing. It's like this experience you can't replicate. Can't replicate it in training at all. Body and soul are challenged together, and it really makes for a remarkable experience, especially when success is the result. So for 10 hours and 46 minutes, an ordinary middle of the pack nobody like me, who faces, you know, common stresses like everybody else, you kind of enter a different world, and it's not just a it's a different world altogether. It's mostly in your brain, of course, and you know, you go from being a simple middle-aged man to becoming an athlete, an ultra runner. And it's a cool feeling, and I can't say enough about how much I enjoy it when there's success. So maybe it's time for me just to drop this worry that I have of blistering and my feet, and the strategy worked. Maybe take a look at some other events that I wouldn't normally look at, and I don't know what events, but clearly my strategy worked, and I couldn't be more pleased. And if you've listened to the podcast for this long and didn't get bored by any of my descriptions, I certainly appreciate that. And why don't we check out the email bag section of the show, see who checked in, because we had a lot of listeners check in for encouragement, and I certainly want to thank everybody for that. So let's check out the email bag section of the show.
All right, I heard from Christina, and she's been listening to the podcast for a long time. She lives in Arizona, and she wrote in to tell me that she's having some motivational problems. Almost 47 years old, injured again. But the main reason she wrote in was telling me that she loved glitter, and that's in response to the glitter, what is it good for episode. So that's pretty funny. Thanks, Christina, for checking in. I really do appreciate it, as always. I heard from Down Under Dave in Australia, and he ran a 60K. It's called the Tarawera race. And I asked him how he went, how he did, and he said it was in New Zealand, and it was 80% humidity, mud, pouring down rain. Just 3 kilometers in the race, he said the shit hit the fan. So ankle deep mud, which required you to hang on to bushes along the way, slide down sometimes hills on your butt. He said five hours of that, then the heavens opened again for the last 6 hours. He ran 11 hours 44 minutes, but did finish. And he said only in the last 5 to 7 kilometers did the race move to gravel paths, and he could run continuously. Before that, it was run 3 steps, walk 3 steps. He lives on Flinders Island, which is in Tasmania. But he actually got pneumonia, and he was there for almost a week in the hospital. And he still writes in. I've got another email a little bit later in the email bag from him, so I'll get to that in just a minute if I didn't just delete everything. I think I might have just deleted the thread. Sorry, Dave. Good to hear. I'm really glad that you write in, and I hope I'm able to respond to you as quick as that you'd like. I heard from Adam, and he lives out in the Midwest, and he's getting ready to join. His plan this year is to join the 50 States Club and Marathon Maniacs when he does what's called the I-35 Challenge. So you run Kansas City Marathon on a Saturday, drive straight up Interstate 35, and run the Des Moines Marathon on Sunday. So he's trying to break out of the marathon mold, and he'll qualify on one weekend for both clubs. And certainly if you run 2 on a weekend, man, that's definitely breaking out of the marathon mold, if you ask me. That's impressive. I wonder if I could do that. I'd like to try that sometime. I'd have to figure out a way to do that where it didn't cost too much, because I don't think I could talk my wife into doing that. He says he lives up in Minnesota. I guess that's considered Midwest. Also, he asked me to keep him posted on what I decided to run in Michigan in April of 2017, because he has not run a marathon in Michigan, and it might be an opportunity to meet up. Adam, I'm planning at this point, April 2017, to run what's called the Trail Marathon. It's in, I'd have to check the website, but it's in the Pinckney National Recreation Area, or maybe it's just the Pinckney Recreational Area. That's around the lake, I know that, I don't even know when it is in April, but that's my plan, because I've got 2 people to listen to the podcast that I know up in Michigan, at Sandy and Marisa, and so I will arrange, a meetup, certainly. I'd probably go an extra day, too, just to visit, but that's a Sunday race, because they have this thing called the No Wimps Challenge. Saturday, you do a half marathon, and then Sunday, you do the 50K. Of course, that attracts me. But what I worry is that if I run the race on Saturday and I do have a really hard time, will I want to run it on Sundays? So, of course those hard things attract me, but that would, if I was to run Saturday and Sunday, that would leave out a day of visiting, although it should only take a couple hours to run the half marathon, I would think 2.5 hours or so for me, maybe 3 if it's a hard course from what it says. So that's called Trail Marathon. .com, I think, and I don't know exactly what day it is, but I'm planning on doing the one in 2017. So thanks for checking in, Adam. I really do appreciate that a whole lot. I heard from Steve, and Steve is a local here in the Richmond area. He actually used to live in the center of the universe, and he wrote in because he saw Honey Buns at Costco and thought of the last podcast. And let me just say something about Honey Buns. I did get a couple Honey Buns for the Mississippi Trail 50. However, I did not eat them because they had so much food at the aid stations. And for whatever reason, I craved peanut butter on saltines, and I ate a lot of those. And then, of course, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And I guess I didn't really talk too much about fueling in the podcast other than some of those. I drank these Ensure drinks that are liquid calories. I think I mentioned that. So I had the Honey Bun Sunday morning for part of my breakfast. I couldn't eat the whole thing because it was so much sugar. And then I brought the other one home, and it's still sitting over here in the kitchen. I still think they're great fuel sources because they kind of sit in your stomach, and that of course that sugar, the sugar carbs, and then it has other carbs. I just didn't eat them that day, but I still think they're great. And Steve, thanks for noticing that. I do appreciate you writing in, and I know you got another email too. I'll look at that in just a second. I heard from Alex Flores. He's also in Arizona, and he said he just responded to the last few shows. He says my DNF show hit home with him. He said the tone and the way I described it brought feelings back for him of his first DNF. It was also at a fat ass. He says it never gets any easier. DNF made me question my mental and physical abilities. Anyway, sounds like he bounced back. Alex says he completed a 60K a few weekends ago. He's got a 50-miler coming up in April. He's hoping to feed off the fitness from that race and get in the proper training. He just doesn't have the pep in his step that he used to. Then he was very complimentary, saying the show always motivates him, knowing that I also have work, family, juggling the daily grind. And then he went into a little bit about glitter. So he says, I told a few people at work about your glitter rant. A few of us have young girls, girls, all in agreement that glitter is pure evil. Why the hell do they put it on clothes? Good question, Alex. I do not know. Email me back. Let me know what 50 mile you're doing in April. I'm just curious what the date is, and all the best with that. And I think I got another email in here from you, or I sent you one. I want to come to Arizona and run a race. I've never been to Arizona ever, so you got to mention something to me. Maybe 2018, 2019, I'll get down there, and maybe we can have an arrangement where we can meet up. So let me know. I think I'd want to come down for something more than just a marathon to make it really worthwhile. Not that there's anything wrong with marathons, but you know, I'm kind of riding the high right now from my ultra, so that's why I'm just thinking in those terms. But go ahead and let me know what race you're doing in April, and all the best to you. I heard from Dirt Dog up in Detroit, Metro Detroit area, and he said also, he's making some comments about my phone freezing up. He says what he does up there, he puts the phone in a fleece glove and then puts it in his jacket like normal, and that seems to have done the trick, and he didn't have any problems with that, so I will try that. Of course, today it's 80 degrees up here in Virginia. I don't know why it's so warm. We're having a little bit of a warm spell, but I'm not complaining. So thanks, Dirt Dog. I really appreciate that. All right, heard from Dr. Smitty, and he was, he says, sounds like your training couldn't have been better. Good luck with the Mississippi 50. He's a judge at a beer festival. And that's when I talked to him. He had had several beers because he was judging. That must be fun to be a judge at a beer festival. He said that if he did a 26-mile training run, he would have to do the extra .2 to make it a full marathon. He said, even though it's not much, telling people you did a full marathon solo sounds better than a 26-miler. He said, I did a 30-mile training run once, and people gave me a hard time about my 49.3 kilometers, asked me why I didn't just finish the 50K. He said 30 just sounded like a nice round number, and he's also giving me a hard time. So I give him a hard time about Mountain Dew and Pop-Tarts, so he's giving me shit about the honey bun training. So he said sometimes the easily digestible simple sugars just work, and that's how he feels about Pop-Tarts. Then he invited me down for the Dismal Swamp Stomp April 9th, which is a half marathon. My wife did that several years ago with a group of her girlfriends, and I went down as a spectator, and we had a real good time. He's not pacing that group, the 145 group. He's pacing the two-hour group instead because they always have a bigger group. And I don't know, let me think about that, Greg. I appreciate the invite to come down to stay with you and visit with your family. And I'll run that past the wife to see what she thinks. I'll have to look that up to see how much that costs. I guess I need something. I'm not signed up for anything right now, so that'd be a lot of fun. So I'll give that some thought. And again, thanks for taking my call for the phone a friend. Really appreciate that. And I think I was so on a runner's high, I don't even remember what we talked about. So, all right, heard from Alex, and she sent me a video with glitter in her daughter's hair. Just ridiculous, this glitter stuff. Thanks, Alex, appreciate that. Heard from Phil Min, wishing me luck. He did the Delano Park 12-hour run in Delano, Decatur, about Alabama, and he says that he did 41 miles, but he thinks he's getting sick. He said he walked a lot after the marathon point. So, Phil, appreciate hearing from you. I think that's actually foolish, Phil. And, foolish, Phil. And thanks again, man, for checking in, and thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you remembering that I was doing the race. I appreciate that a whole lot. Heard from Steve, and I was just basically telling him that I had spotty cell service, and he was just giving me his number. So I'm glad you still listen, Steve. And I'm curious to know if you've done any other races. Have you done another 50K? Or are you going to go up and do the Dahlgren race again this summer? I'm thinking about doing that if I can do some running in the heat. I also heard from Ryan, last email, a former member of Team Incognito, I guess still part of it. And this was the, he said he lives up in Canada. He was responding to the cold phone issues. Usually doesn't run with the phone, but sometimes he commutes to work with a combination of running and then taking the train. He carries his Android in a running backpack. He hasn't noticed anything with that. He says you recommend keeping it as close to your body as possible. You know, I did that also, Ryan, and it just didn't seem to work. It just froze up, and it was real disappointing because I wanted to use the Map My Run app, even though that really sucks the juice out of it. But it's good to check in. He sent me a link to it's a guy that ran over the Indian reservation in the denim shorts, and I'm trying to remember the name of the race. It's called the Antelope Canyon 50-Mile Ultra Marathon. This is the race that they canceled because this guy made it look like he was drinking alcohol, I think, on the reservation. And all I can say to that is I don't know the whole story here, but I just think people are just overly sensitive now. Everybody is. You know, it's political correctness is running amok and it's just getting crazy. So thanks for passing that on, Ryan. I do appreciate that. And always good to hear from you, especially since... I don't know if I'll ever get to Canada to run a race, but if I do, it'll certainly be in the Calgary area, so I can visit with you and Rachel. That's it for the email back section of the show, but I did have just a couple other things to wrap up on. I wanted to give a couple stats about the Mississippi Trail 50. There was 107 people registered for the 50-miler, 107. For the 50K, there was 96 people registered for that, and then the 20K, there were 82, so just under 300 people all told, I think, for all the events. And what's really, and me and John Snuggs were the only two people from Virginia, which was funny. Now, when you go to the results, okay, for the 50-miler, okay, you got 57 people finished out of 107 that registered. So where's the other 50? What happened to them? You know, okay. Well, I think some of them went down to the 50K, and that's just a testament on how hard the conditions were, I guess. I came in 34th out of 57 who finished that. Again, my time was 10 hours, 46 minutes and 0 seconds. Snuggy Bear came in at 11 hours, 7 minutes, 26 seconds. And I want to say that, the look on his face when he crossed the finish line was just like a combination of anger and determination and happiness. It was kind of a very strange combination. And he was, you know, emotional at the end. He was like really fired up emotionally. And I just thought it was really cool. And it was almost like he probably could have kept going, certainly. John, it looked like you could have kept going. You know, one or both of us could have. I felt pretty good at the end. I mean, I had a hard time walking to the car. That's only because the race was over. But if there were still miles to go, I wonder how far I could have gone. Certainly felt a lot better than I did at the 50-mile mark down at the graveyard when I did the 100K down there a couple of years ago. Because I was running on pavement. I think there's, you know, a big difference when you run on the trails when you run on pavement. So that was the 57 people finished the 50-miler, and then the 50K had 80 people finish. So I think there was a lot of no-shows. I just have a hard time believing that so many people would pay all that money and just completely not show up. But, you know, people do what they want. So that's, you know, middle of the pack, right? 34th out of 57. That's certainly probably closer to the back of the pack than the front of the pack. but I'm very satisfied with that. And when I look at the results and I look at who was in front of me, I had a guy come in, well, Tim from Tennessee, 2 seconds ahead of me. I just let him run up ahead at whatever. And then in front of him was a guy that was 16 seconds, and then in front of them was 6 minutes ahead. And I wanted to correct something I said earlier. I said earlier that I finished 25.4 miles in 5 hours and 1 minute. I actually did the math wrong because I was looking through the photos from the race, and I finished my second loop, and the race clock said 4 hours, 51 minutes. So I put an extra 10 minutes in there somewhere. And I remember, because I remember my dad saying, well, you beat your goal. You did it quicker than that. You're ahead. And so I had to fix that. So it was actually 4 hours, 51 minutes, and I was even more pleased with that when I saw that picture. I don't know why I didn't notice that before. So what's ahead for me? I don't know yet. I was actually surfing, I don't know, do people say surfing the internet anymore? I was looking on websites, Ultra Sign Up for potentially another Ultra this year. I didn't do any marathons last year. I was looking at my spreadsheet that I keep track of all the races that I do just to kind of reflect on. And I didn't do any last year, and that was the first year since 2006 I didn't do a marathon. So I'm going to make up for it this year. I want to find another one to do while I'm still got my training in, and maybe I can find something in April or May. I don't know if that's going to be possible or not. That'd be kind of quick, but I just would hate to lose my level of training right now and not do anything else, although maybe the best thing to do is rest. I don't know. Here's the end of the show. I appreciate you for sticking around, listening to the podcast. Thanks for listening. I hope you come back for another episode. I'm going to come back around, and I've really enjoyed going over the race and kind of analyzing a little bit. It's been a lot of fun. So this is Ashland Dave. We're running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.